People forget about 2008. People forget about the dot-com crash. People forget about savings and loan. I was day trading during the dot-com crisis. I lost my internship after 9/11 and the dot-com crisis. I lost all my lines of credit during the Great Recession. I had zero income coming in from my medical device business and my real estate business during COVID. I have seen and participated in each part of every one of these cycles.
What's going on, everybody? This is the Passive Wealth Strategy Show, the show that will teach you how to build wealth with real estate without buying yourself another job. As always, I am your host, Taylor Lote, and today we are joined by Chris Larson. Today's guest, Chris Larson, is the founder and principal of Next Level Income. Chris has been investing in and managing real estate for over 20 years. He left the medical device sales profession after 18 years and has done some very big things in real estate. He's been actively involved in over $1 billion of real estate acquisitions, and today is working with a lot of high-income professionals to help them invest in real estate as well. Today, we're going to dig into his concept or his idea around the 18 and a half year real estate cycle, and we're going to see where things go. Sounds like a really interesting concept. Not a lot of knowledge today. Chris, thank you so much for joining us today. Can you fill us out a little bit more and tell us about what you're investing in these days?
Yeah, Taylor, it's great to see you again. And man, it's been a heck of a ride the past few years. It really has been. And I think, you know, you and I resonate with, you know, on a lot of levels with different things. I got to kind of cross through a lot of gates when I try to figure out an investment. So today, I think in a nutshell, I'm investing in quality properties that have higher than average margins or cash flow. And a lot of times that means that they have some sort of operating component, whether it's a short-term rental or a car wash, as we were talking about before the show, or mobile home parks. And I'm accumulating cash, frankly, because I think that, you know, it's a wise time to start to take a little bit of profit off the table and prepare for a period that I think there's going to be some opportunities ahead.
Makes a lot of sense. So let's dive right into this 18 and a half year real estate cycle concept. Honestly, I'm flying a little blind here for the listeners. I'm not sure exactly where you're going to take it or where this conclusion comes from, although I'm very enticed by the idea. So where's the best place to get started to start talking about the 18 and a half year real estate cycle?
Yeah. And actually, it's even more perplexing if I said it's actually 18.6 years. I usually say 18 and a half because it sounds nicer, right? But we're engineers, Taylor, so let's be precise. 18.6 years, sure. Right? Okay. If you go through kind of my investment thesis, so there's a few things that dictate when I make an investment because you're like, hey, what are you investing in? So number one is where we are in the real estate cycle. Number two is demographics. And then number three is actually looking at the deal itself. So like kind of drilling down in that asset class, that deal itself. So if you say, well, wait, what do you mean by the real estate cycle? I was just reading an article by Ray Dalio here. I was flying back on a flight on Saturday, reading through. And Ray says, hey, you know, cycles go in kind of these 7 years plus or minus segments. And I'm always looking for something to disprove this 18 and a half year cycle. Well, the 18 year cycle comes from going back in history. So if you go back all the way into when we started recording real estate sales in the United States in Chicago in the 1850s, you'll find that approximately every 18 and a half years, real estate goes up and it goes down. It goes up and it goes down. And that continues. I noticed this when I heard about this concept by a gentleman by the name of Philip Anderson. He presented to a group that I was a part of about a decade ago. And I listened and he was talking about this and I start doing the math in my head and I think, okay, go back in time. You have 2008 and then go back before that. You have the savings and loan crisis. I'm like, wait, my parents both lost their jobs in the savings and loan crisis because they're working for a real estate company. It goes back. I'm like, okay, this makes, you know, it makes sense. 9/11 was the mid-cycle slowdown. So what's the mid-cycle slowdown? This 18 and a half year cycle is made up of 2 7-year periods. So there's a 7-year period up, a mid-cycle slowdown, which is, you know, typically several months, maybe a year, another 7-year cycle up, and then a 4-year down flat cycle, like down or flat cycle, and then it repeats all over again. Well, Ray Dalio says 7-year cycles plus or minus. Those 7-year cycles fit into that. That's 7, 7, 4. You hear other people, other economists talk about 10-year cycles, plus or minus. 10 years times two, plus or minus 18 and a half. That fits there as well. And I haven't, I keep trying to find something that really disproves this. But the question is, this just a pattern? What causes this pattern? And what causes this pattern, this goes back into the work of a gentleman called the name of Fred Harrison. And what Fred Harrison talks about is that the values in the land. So this is something that if you're listening, you're a real estate investor, I think you can understand. So if I buy a piece of property, Taylor, well, if that property goes up in value, what's really going up in value? Is it the property? Is it the building? Because the government says the building is depreciating in value. So where is the value actually being stored? It's actually in the land itself. Now, the utility may come from the building, but if you wipe everything out, it's the land. And here's an example. My wife and I started building spec homes back in like 2012-ish, okay? We'd buy a lot for $50,000. We build a $350,000, or we'd sell it for $350,000. We'd build this house. We'd make $75,000 or $100,000 gross. So we'd pay off that $50,000 lot, you know, that we bought. So we'd make 100% in about a year on our investment. Well, how could we build that house without paying 100% cash? The bank would lend us enough money on a $50,000 lot that we owned to build a $250,000 to $300,000 home. So imagine doing that repeatedly. You can see what effect that land has on credit creation. And that's where the cycles all come from. The credit that is created from this land. And it infiltrates its way not only through real estate, but also through the business cycles, through banks who create the credit. The Fed obviously plays into that, as you and I know very well, where it comes to that. So basically, it's this virtuous credit cycle that is driven by the land values for us real estate investors that ultimately creates this cycle that repeats.
Wow. Okay. I wonder to what extent like human nature plays a role in this, and it plays a role in everything, but more specifically, what I mean is when it comes to things like mania or uncertainty or attempts to predict the future. And we, I think, are always in this state, especially if you listen to any of like the corporate news or anything like that, kind of acting like today's uncertainty is special, unlike the uncertainty of, let's just put a number on it, about 4 years ago when we were getting into the COVID pandemic. Now, we forget what yesterday's uncertainty felt like because we know what happened. So it doesn't feel as uncertain as it did at the time, but today's uncertainty is super special because of things happening overseas or the Fed tightening rates or the things that are happening today that we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow or over the rest of the year. So I wonder to what extent the human nature, uncertainty, things like mania or depressions and folks wanting to pull back from markets kind of feed into this cycle of whether it's 7 years, the pause, 7 years, 4 years, what have you, but it's got to play a role in there, right?
I think that's an awesome observation, and this is why. So if we look at a generational cycle, it's somewhere around 19 years. There's a great book, if you're listening, that I read here towards the end of last year. It's called The Fourth Turning Is Here by Neil Howe. And Neil, are you familiar?
I've heard of it. I haven't read it.
Yeah. You got to read it. And the thing is, Neil Howe talks about how the full four full cycles that turn occur between 80 and 90 years. And it's four cycles in between 80 and 90 years, somewhere in there. But, you know, if you look at a generational cycle of being about 20 years, what happens is people forget about 2008. People forget about the dot-com crash. People forget about savings and loan. Well, my parents lost their jobs during the savings and loan crisis. I was day trading during the dot-com crisis. I lost my internship after 9/11 and the dot-com crisis. I lost all my lines of credit during the Great Recession. I had zero income coming in from my medical device business and my real estate business during COVID. I have seen and participated in each part of every one of these cycles going back now, you know, through two cycles. So I've kind of seen them. So I've felt all of this, but a lot of people haven't and they forget. And the problem is humans, we think linearly. We think that the world operates on linear terms. Nothing is linear. It's all curvilinear. So as, you know, as engineers, we understand that things, you know, if you look at a curve over a short period of time, it looks like a line, but it's really not. It's a curve. So when you see that something goes up and down and it curves up and it curves down, and I chuckled because I saw Ray Dalio's picture and he had this curve that went up and down. I'm like, that's the cycle. That's the real estate cycle. And it was just a little, you know, crude drawing that he had in there. But I think a lot of it is driven because, you know, I think it's less driven by that we're looking for patterns, Taylor, because I think we're looking for linear patterns. I think it's more driven by that we forget what has occurred and we think, oh, this time isn't really like the last time. But it is amazing how history repeats itself over and over again. And, you know, we, in a lot of ways, we make the same mistakes over and over again. You know, now that being said, I would say it's not a repeat of history. It's the future is going to rhyme with history. So I don't know what's going to happen this cycle or what's going to transpire. But I think, you know, the same underlying really laws are applying, which is the laws of credit creation that ultimately push into these. And then human greed, human psychology plays into those. But also remember, you know, you have a family, I have a family. We operate on predictable generational cycles. You know, I can tell you that, you know, if, you know, people are like, oh, I'm never going to have a minivan. Well, when I had two kids and they were both toddlers, what did we do? We bought a minivan and we thought it was awesome. You know, it's like, it's crazy. And then as my boys became teenagers, we moved out of that little 1500 square foot house into a house that was twice as big, you know, because we wanted, and guess what? That's on average what everybody does. And our spending peaks right when our kids are in high school, typically in our late 40s, if we have, you know, the average two kids. And, you know, I can tell you that our spending has been increasing and I sure hope it's about to be here. So all of these things, you know, they kind of overlay, but they're all related to these things. And again, it goes back to credit, because what do you do when you buy a house? What do you do when you buy two? Like, I got two SUVs in my garage now. You use credit, you know, you expand business, you expand, you know, your earning power and do those things. So it all kind of flows into everything.
I think what we tend to miss or maybe not think about enough is the impact of black swan events, right? COVID being a black swan event that basically nobody other than certain members of Congress who happened to, you know, trade on the basis of their knowledge, nobody really saw COVID coming. I think one of the things that
we could do a whole podcast on, right? Huh?
Exactly. One of the things that I think a lot of folks are pointing out as a potential black swan event in the future, or something that could precipitate a black swan event in the future, is just the level of debt that the federal government has today. The last number I saw, I don't keep it super close on it, it was like $34 trillion. And with rates being higher today and deficit spending, everything, that's just going to snowball. It's going to get massive. And I do wonder, at what point is that going to have to change? Is that going to happen in my lifetime? I don't know. I'm 34. Maybe it seems reasonably likely that could happen in my lifetime. But okay, is that going to happen in the next 5 years? I definitely don't know the answer to that. But how could a black swan event like that play into this 18.6 year real estate cycle?
Yeah. So what's interesting is, and I went back through this because I'm like, all right, are these things occurring and we just don't see them? Are they occurring and we just don't remember them? Okay. So there's a war in Ukraine going on right now, right? We go about our daily lives and like we talk about it a little bit, but in general, I think most people either it doesn't affect them or they don't want it to happen or they want it to end. You know, it's like, okay, but it's kind of not really affecting us. Well, I think when these panics occur, when these things occur, we say, oh, okay, like this occurred, like COVID occurred. That was a black swan event. Ukraine, you know, there was the collapse of long-term capital. That was a black swan event. You know, 9/11 happened. That was a black swan event. But there was a lot of other things. There was the Asian currency crisis in, I think it was 2015. You know, I recall that, but it wasn't overlaid with, say, you know, a downturn in the real estate cycle. So I think there's two things. These events are occurring regularly. Some are obviously of a greater magnitude than others, like COVID, which shut the world down, you know, like World War II, you know, right? Like these things are massive events. And they do, those types of events, they do disrupt these cycles and these generations. So like you have the baby boomers. So that's an important point that you touched on, Taylor, which is, you know, you look at these and if there's a massive event, like I think COVID and the amount of stimulus may have warped the second phase of this cycle. So typically the cycle accelerates the second 7-year cycle, which would be from say 2020 into 20 up into 2026. It would accelerate into the end of the cycle, like we saw into 2007, for instance. Whereas I think this time, I think we got a sharper acceleration out of COVID. And I believe that it's probably going to kind of level off and plateau into the end of this cycle. But speaking to the other thing you mentioned, which was basically one of my greatest fears is a U.S. currency crisis. I don't know what the answer to that is. I certainly am concerned about it. I do know during like this part of the cycle, if you look, typically the dollar becomes weaker. So things that are basically a short on the dollar or a bet against the dollar, like Bitcoin, typically would appreciate in these types of periods. Gold would appreciate during these types of periods when there's money printing. But if there's a total collapse of the dollar, it's not the reserve currency anymore, then, you know, that's one of those, like you say, black swan events, which, you know, it would amplify these things, or something like I would hate to suggest, but like a civil war would potentially amplify or accelerate something like that, most certainly.
Yeah, well, hopefully we certainly avoid that at all costs. Yeah. I do think that I think we missed the boat a little bit. And when folks talk about inflation as increases in prices of things, which is true, that is the common angle of looking at it. I think the opposite angle of perceiving that same event is that rapid inflation, whether it's hyperinflation or the inflation we saw kind of throughout COVID, is really just a crash in the value of the dollar as a result of, well, all the money printing that they did and heaving all the dollars onto the market. So that's really, we did see, in my opinion, a crash in the value of the dollar when we saw rapid price appreciation in assets and commodities and everything left and right. Well, I mean, where do we go from here? How do we use this knowledge constructively? I mean, knowledge for knowledge's sake is all well and good, but again, you mentioned
we're just
BSing here.
BSing, right?
But being engineers, we always look for utility in the things that we learn. How can I use this to my advantage, or can I really? Because there is there are error bars in here, and uncertainty and unknowns and everything. How do you use this knowledge constructively?
That's a great question. So again, kind of going back to my framework, which is okay, where are we in the real estate cycle or the cycle of credit creation? Like, however you want to describe it, where are we in the demographic cycle? So like, are we investing in an area like multifamily over the past decade that outperformed because we had more renters than we have had historically? Going forward, I would argue that senior housing is probably going to outperform because we're going to have a massive influx of seniors, you know, 10,000 a day turning 80, you know, they're going to need care. So like, okay, you follow all those. So how do you use it? Well, first off, I don't make big bets on short-term trends. So I try to bet on long-term trends. And I say, okay, if we're coming up to a point where the cycle is going to turn down, what do you do during that period? You want to have lower leverage, you want to have higher quality, and you want to have more cash on hand than you typically would. I'm not the guy that's going to go bury myself underground in a shipping container bunker and say, hey, you know, I'm going to bet the world's going to end and I'm going to do this. Because there's an opportunity cost to that, right? There's a life that you're losing that you could be living. Just like if I sell everything, right? And, you know, the dollar actually deflates, well, you know, then I'm going to be penalized and the dollar inflates, as you were saying, then I'm going to be penalized as a saver having all this cash without any real assets. So there's always, you know, you always have to kind of be conscious of those bets that you're making. So I think if you're aware of where we're going and you say, okay, there's some, you know, potential quote unquote black swan events that are going to occur, maybe I'll put a little bit of my portfolio in Bitcoin or gold, or maybe I'll have some canned food and, you know, I'll get a bunker with my friends, but I'm not going to sell my house and move into a bunker. I'm kind of saying that tongue in cheek, but, you know, so I'm still going to own real estate, Taylor, but I'm going to make sure that I'm in a safer position going forward. When I look at these things, so I'm going to say, okay, let's decrease our loan to value. you know, if we're going to have less credit going forward. I mean, that's really inflation. Yeah, it's created by money printing, but credit creation creates money like magic too. And when you reduce credit or you shrink, so you say, hey, you know, this, the value of property has gone down. We're going to lend you less money. Well, if you only have a 20% or 10% down payment and you lose 10 or 20% of the value of that property, like we saw during the Great Recession, that wipes out massive amounts of wealth, but that's also very deflationary. So there's inflation from printing, but there's also inflation and deflation from credit creation. So we have to balance all those things. So what do you do? I think you say you focus on quality, focus on cash flow, you know, maintain adequate cash reserves so you can cover those rough times, and you know, and stick, you know, try to continue to harden and really, you know, figure out what your frameworks are during those periods.
I think that's a wise takeaway and probably something that we could look to apply no matter where we think we are in this 18.6 year cycle, because you're saying, okay, yep, lower the leverage. Well, is there really a good time when we would say we need to leverage to the hilt? Hey, you know, pushing it a little bit. Yeah, maybe you're, yep, making a wise bet in that point, but you're also taking more risk. And really the goal, yes, of real estate investing is to build massive wealth over a long time span. And the only reason we would want, yes, to leverage to the hilt is to try to get some massive short-term gain, but then we're taking huge risks in the short term. You're also saying keeping cash on, yep, hand. Well, that's a wise thing to do anyway, yep, because you're going to have, yes, things that come up in your properties. You're going to have massive repairs that happen. Maybe your insurance costs go up. That happens in normal markets. Yep. So it seems to me to, it's wise to always be ready for that rainy day, right? If maybe that's a kind of a cliche or a silly takeaway, but we don't necessarily know where we are in this 18.6 year cycle until we're past it, right? It's kind of a backward looking diagnostic thing. And I think if we kind of pretend like maybe we're in this 4-year downturn at any given point, then we're significantly more likely to be ready for that time to come and to make it through that 4-year period. But, you know, I'll let you respond to that.
There's no harm in safety, right? But if you have kids and you say, well, if I never let my kids leave the house, there's a point where you can be too safe, sure, right? So it's like, yeah, you gotta be, if you want to be tough, you gotta expose yourself to discomfort and do that. It's like, all right, does that mean you have to make a silly business decision? The answer is no. You know, there is money to be left on the table, but I know operators, as you probably do, that, you know, we're talking like 2019, they weren't buying any properties because they thought, you know, the market was overvalued, and they missed out for years on gains. So I think there is a balance. You know, you have to say, okay, you know, apply your principles, but I would say there are times, like for instance, the stock market today is at historically high valuations. It's kind of fluctuated up and down a little bit. You know, I would say that's probably not a bad time to have lower.
Spilling water myself for the listeners.
probably, you know, there are certain times when, you know, like as Warren Buffett says, when there's blood in the streets, buy, right? Like there are times when he has higher amounts of cash and times when he has more investments to make. And I think if we understand the way the real estate market moves and we understand, you know, when those times of greater risk are, we can have a little bit more protection during those times. And in my opinion, we're probably about 2 years from that next downturn. And I personally am focused a little bit more on safety now and quality than I am on kind of like risk on, as they say. And, you know, taking on, like, say, like a development project, I don't think a residential development project or multifamily development project would be optimal to start right now if it was finishing in, say, 2 years, right as the cycle's peaking, right? If that makes sense. So you say, okay, what if I buy like more of a core asset or, you know, a high cash flowing asset that I could own during that period, that I don't have to exit during that period. You know, you can kind of tailor your, no pun intended, your decisions towards that.
Okay. Yeah. That definitely makes a lot of sense. And, you know, helpful to, yep, think about these particular cycles and where we stand, and, you know, give us maybe a window into the future. I think also thinking about the credit cycle in that particular venue, very relevant to real estate investing and, you know, the economy more broadly. And folks aren't necessarily used to thinking about that, but very, very relevant for real estate investors. Right now, we're going to take a quick break for our sponsor. All right, Chris, I've got three questions I ask every guest on the show. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Great. First one, what's your number one book recommendation?
Yeah, so because we're talking about the 18.6-year real estate cycle, I pulled this out. This is The Secret Life of Real Estate and Banking by Philip Anderson, the same gentleman I saw present. It's about as thick as a Bible, and I keep it next to my desk in the drawer, just like I keep my Bible next to the drawer next to my bed.
Nice. That's an interesting one. I haven't heard of that book before. I'll have to check it out.
It's worth it.
Question number two, who or what inspires you?
Yeah, so I'll tell you, I just read a book about, you know, the Elon Musk and Twitter, and I'm really inspired by Elon Musk because he's focused on, if you listen to what he says, on the future of humanity. You know, he wants to colonize Mars, and he bought Twitter because he thinks that free speech is essential to the future of humanity. And I think that he's taken a lot of heat for that from certain segments of society. And he's definitely, I would say that he's probably been hurt financially by it, but that man speaks the truth. And that's, I think he's an inspiration for being in the position to do that, but also taking the actions that he's done. I'm really inspired by him.
Good call. Question number three, think about Chris at 80 years old. If you could sit down, have a conversation or maybe a Zoom call with Chris, what advice or feedback do you think 80-year-old Chris would give to Chris of today?
I think we should all contemplate that regularly. So I love that question. And I was actually thinking about this a week ago. And, you know, what I just said about Elon Musk, I think, you know, being true to yourself and speaking the truth, I think if you live a life of truth, if you seek the truth, if you speak the truth, if you're honest about who you are and your words are in line with that, I think there's a lot of value in that. So I think my 80-year-old self would say, hey, you know, don't be afraid to speak the truth, but be kind and, you know, remember that it's not the money, it's the connections. And, you know, that's why I value you having me back on here, Taylor. You know, I was sharing a story about a connection that I made with a gentleman that I was brought together with. So I think that I'm going to make sure that I take those moments and I appreciate those connections between now and the time I'm 80. And, you know, hopefully my 80-year-old self will say you made a good choice in that.
I love that. I'm sure you are making those a good choice in that regard. This podcast has been a fantastic way for me to connect with folks like you and an awful lot of our listeners out there. And I certainly appreciate all of those connections. And if not for hosting this podcast, I may never have met a lot of the folks out there who I've had the opportunity to. So those connections, incredibly valuable, and I appreciate that. And Chris, I appreciate you joining us today and sharing this knowledge. If folks want to reach out and get in touch or learn more about you, where can they track you down?
Yeah, well, thanks for all the things you do here. And if you're listening today, check us out at nextlevelincome.com. You can get a free copy of our book. Just click on the book link. If you put your address in, I'll send you a copy. You can also check out what we're doing in the multifamily space, the self-storage space, the mobile home park space, and the car wash space. You can click on the invest link and you can schedule a call with our team to learn more about that. Or just take advantage of all the free stuff we have on the website, including our podcast, The Next Level Income Show.
Great. Well, thank you once again for joining us today. To everybody out there, thank you for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe and catch us here every weekday. Right now, I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you on the next one.